welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, the IMS Integration Suite, What, When, Where, Why, Who, and How questions answered. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, we'll discuss the role of IMS in SOA implementations and how IMS customers can leverage existing IMS applications and data in the SOA solution, and learn how the IBM development tools and the IMS integration technologies that can be used to access IMS application programs and databases, as well as details on IMS V10 support for access to web services. The speaker for today's teleconference is Kenny Blackman, IBM Advanced Technical Support Group IMS Connectivity. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our speaker, Kenny Blackman.
Thanks. Today, we're going to talk about the IMS Integration Suite. What we're going to look at is some questions you may have regarding what is it, when could I use it, where, when, and who else would use it, and how can I use it. So let's move to slide 2 and look at the IMS architecture. IMS is an application server and a database server. The TM application server provides the runtime environment for your application programs that you write in COBOL, PL1, Pascal, Assembler, and now Java. Also provided with the product is the capability to leverage those application programs, either through OTMA, APPC, V10LU, and most recently, TCP/IP through IMS Connect. In the case of the IMS database server, we've introduced technology called ODBA and CCTL, so other transaction managers can also leverage the IMS database services. Moving to slide 3, let's take a look at IMS Connect. IMS Connect has been integrated with the product with version 9. So when you install IMS version 9, you will also get the IMS Connect function. IMS Connect provides us a TCP/IP listener. With this capability, you have client application programs can use socket protocols to access your existing IMS transaction programs. IMS Connect also provides user exit routines that you could use or utilize the ones that we provide that allow you to massage the message before it comes into the IMS application environment. The nice thing about this protocol is your existing application programs continue to run without modification. So that application that you wrote 30 years ago, who was used to working with the 3270 screen, can continue to run without knowing that now we have a TCP/IP client who's requested that service. Moving to slide 4, one of the things we need to review is the application protocols that IMS Connect supports. We have sync levels, sync level none, confirm, and sync point. We also have commit modes, commit then send protocol, also we call commit mode 0, and send and commit protocol, which we call commit mode 1. Looking at commit mode 0 protocol, you see that what we do is we work with the application in a manner you're accustomed to. The application gets scheduled, we retrieve the input message from the message queue, access the IMS databases, do its processing, and insert a response back to the message queue. When that is done, we finish a unit of work. IMS will take over sync point process, go through two-phase commit, and deliver the output message. So this is a normal programming model we're accustomed to. With the commit mode 1 protocol, what happens here, though, is that the application will still be scheduled in the same way, still retrieve the message, do its access to the database, insert a response back. However, in this case, when the IMS sync point manager begins the sync point process, the first thing we'll do is send back the output response and then carry on with the sync point process. This is where we come in with the sync levels of none, confirm, and sync point. So this way, the client application program interacting with your existing application program can have some impact as far as when does sync point begin. With sync level of none, there's no impact. We just deliver the message and start sync point process. With sync level of confirm, we're going to deliver the message. However, we need to wait for a confirmation from the client application that it received the output message. So we'll hold up sync point process until we get that acknowledgement. And with sync level sync point, now we're fully engaged in a coordinated two-phase commit capability. In this model, then, the client application will receive that response, and the application can be working with other resources on its side and want to engage in a fully coordinated two-phase commit. This process, then, IMS will participate with that work unit to have us commit those resources on the IMS side in conjunction with those resources touched by the client application program. Let's move to slide number 5, and look at commit process in summary. We have different application models. We have the conversational transaction, fast path, non-conversational, non-fast path. In those models, when I use conversational protocols, I need to use the send and commit protocol. We do not support commit and send with a conversational transaction. With the fast path program model, also we have to have send and commit protocol. The fast path for commit and send is not supported. Both of those cases, though, as I said before, is we're going to enqueue the message to the output destination, and based upon when we go through sync point determines when we send the output response. Moving to slide 6. Now that we've got IMS Connect in the picture, what we see is that we have, with the infrastructure of not only APPC, OTMA, ODBA, the plumbing is in place to allow other application runtime environments to leverage your IMS transactions in your IMS databases. So this architecture chart here just shows you those foundations and those capabilities that can be used then by IMS. Which leads us to slide 7, where we look at the phases of e-business adoption. When we first came out with the Internet capabilities, it was a browser environment. So what you need to do is just get on the net, advertise your runtime environment, and start processing. Then we moved into the next stage, which was enterprise integration. Here we're moving from not only browsing now, but I'm going to start doing some work across the Internet. Finally, we get to the last stage we're in right now. It's called the on-demand stage, where what I want to be able to do is adopt and work with existing applications and modify those applications if I need to. This is where we come into play as far as the IMS Integration Suite. We'll see as we go through our presentation how our different technologies can help you leverage the on-demand environment. So what are those styles of transformation? Let's look at slide 8. In here we see we have three types of transformation. One technique is what we call improve. Basically what I'm doing here is just putting a new face on my existing application program. So you're familiar with 3270 green screens where we have MFS massaging the data before it's given to the application program. All I would be doing in this case in the reface model would be moving from a 3270 green screen to a web browser environment, still keeping my application intact. In the adapt mode of transformation, what happens here is that what we want to do is build a larger solution, and as we build that larger solution, we want to be able to leverage what we have as far as existing applications or data. So we'll see how we have some technology in place that allows you to take your existing IMS application programs and your IMS data and leverage that as you build and adapt new applications. And finally, in the innovation stage, where we're going to innovate, here we're going to re-engineer applications. So you may have some existing business logic, are some existing ways to navigate through an IMS database. So we'll show you how you can innovate and utilize that business logic as you build new applications. So let's move to slide 9. And that presents us with the challenge. So we have this notion of web services, and we have the capabilities as far as IMS TM and IMS database. So what can we do as far as accessing and leveraging that technology through web services? One of the things we need to look at is our requirements regarding how do I want to access the IMS transaction. Do I want to go through a direct connection model or a messaging queuing model? Do I need to have direct access to my IMS data? And if I do I want to do a read-only or an update? And another thing we need to look at is ability for an IMS application not only to be represented as a web service, but also be able to access a web service for an IMS application program. So these technologies is what we'll look at and we'll explore regarding the IMS Integration Suite. Okay, so slide 10, Integration Suite, what is this? Essentially what it is it's IMS middleware functions and tools we put in place to enable you to leverage your IMS demand integration requirements. We have connectivity to IMS TM and IMS DB. We do require IMS version 9. The good thing about these capabilities is Integration Suite is they can be directly accessed going to the IMS website. So I have a URL on the slide here that tells you how to access through a web browser, our URL, where you can download these Integration Suite tools that I'm going to talk about. Slide 11. So what are our tools? We have IMS TM Resource Adapter. You may remember this as IMS Connector for Java. So what we've done now is we've renamed this to IMS TM Resource Adapter. I'll discuss that technology. We'll talk about IMS SOAP Gateway. IMS MFS Web Support, what do we have in place as far as existing message format services capability applications? What functions can we provide to leverage that through a web support environment? On the database side, we had the IMS DB Resource Adapter. This was also called before the IMS JDBC Connector. So we renamed that so we have avoid confusion as far as when we have IMS TM Resource Adapter as opposed to when we use an IMS DB Resource Adapter. And then we'll talk about the IMS Delhi Model Utility, how that provides us capability to leverage our DB Resource Adapter. And the last part, we'll talk about IMS XML database, how we can now use XML technology and store within IMS databases. So let's move to slide 12 and start talking about the IMS TM Resource Adapter. Slide 13, an overview of the adapter. Essentially, there are two aspects to the adapter environment. One is the development piece, and the other is the runtime environment. Essentially, what we do with the development piece, we have tools. In the case of IBM, we have Rational Application Developer, WebSphere Integration Developer, and WebSphere Developer for Z. So the IMS TM Resource Adapter is inside these development environments. Essentially, what you do is you're going to import into those environments your C, your COBOL, your PO1, or MFS source. The tool will walk you through a series of wizards that will take that information and generate the bindings we need to represent the input and output message for your application program running IMS. Once I've gone through that process, I build an enterprise application. I can test that in that development environment. When I'm satisfied, I would now deploy that to an application server. The WebSphere application server provides J2E runtime environment we need to run this enterprise application. IMS TM Resource Adapter is a fully compliant J2E connector architecture. So it's a plug-in that you install in the application server runtime environment to allow us to have TCP/IP connectivity up to IMS. So here's where we have IMS Connect come into play. Running in the runtime environment then, the IMS TM Resource Adapter will open up a socket connection, talk to IMS Connect, deliver the message through OTMA, and schedule your IMS application program. Because we've gone through the process of generating those Java bindings, the application program, when it gets scheduled and gets its message off the queue, has no idea the message came from an IMS TM Resource Adapter. That's the beauty of the message queue environment within IMS. Moving to slide 14, just want to show you the different runtime environments that we do support with our TM Resource Adapter. So I could be running WebSphere Application Server on a ZOS platform going through IMS Connect. I could be on a distributed platform. And I could also be on running on Z Linux environment. So all these environments will allow me to have connectivity then to my IMS system. The other thing to point out with this chart is that IMS Connect, because it uses OTMA connectivity, is able to talk to one or more IMS systems. So I could have one IMS Connect talk to IMS A and IMS B and IMS C. I could have two IMS Connects, each one interchanged as far as what's back in IMS systems. So you give lots of flexibility as far as you want to configure your TM Resource Adapter, working with your IMS Connect, working with your IMS systems. Now let's move to slide 15. We talked about connectivity earlier as far as what does the protocols that IMS Connect supports. Regarding IMS TM Resource Adapter, it supports commit mode 0 and commit mode 1, and it supports sync levels of non-confirm and sync point. So you have an opportunity to really build powerful application programs running in your WebSphere application server environment to leverage your existing IMS applications. This is how we get in that opportunity to adapt and innovate our existing application programs. Moving to slide 16. Another aspect you may need to consider when you're building these applications is timeout. In the case of our TM Resource Adapter, we provide two forms of timeout, an execution timeout and a socket timeout. In the case of the execution timeout capabilities, what we're looking at is the time IMS Connect receives the message and sends it over to IMS. We're waiting for IMS to schedule an application program and return a response. In this environment, then, we need to have a timeout that says, how long will IMS Connect wait before it says, okay, there's something wrong, I cannot schedule the application, I need to return back to my requester. That's what execution timeout gives us. Also, though, we need to have a socket timeout capability. What this means is our IMS TM Resource Adapter is going to establish a socket connection to IMS Connect. And it's going to wait for a response to come back from IMS Connect. So while we're waiting, we could be going through TCP/IP flows, we may have a network problem. So the socket timeout gives us a capability where IMS TM Resource Adapter will know IMS Connect, something's wrong, I can't talk to it, so I can end my socket connection. So these two socket connections, these timeout ones, give us the extra ability we need to manage our client application so we're not sitting out there waiting for a response. Slide 17. One of the things that is taking place now is SOAP technology. So we also provide the capability through our IMS Team Resource Adapter, running an application server environment, to use SOAP protocols to interact with a client to work with our IMS application program. So you can see that we are continuing to move forward as new standards come about with the web services environment. IMS is providing the infrastructure we need to allow you to leverage existing application programs without change. Another capability we have with our resource adapter that we've introduced with version 10 of the product is to be able to retrieve an asynchronous message. Today, we could schedule an IMS application program, gets the message off the IOPCB, and inserts a response back to the IOPCB. However, the application program could also insert to what we call an alternate PCB. When I do that, I have a message out there waiting to be processed. Using IMS Team Resource Adapter now, client application program can do what we call receive async output processing. In this way, what we will do is IMS Team Resource Adapter will open up a connection, send a request into IMS, and say, do you have any messages? Give me the message you got queued up for the alternate PCB and return that for me. So this new capability now allows you to build more powerful and flexible client application programs leveraging existing IMS applications. Because we put in that resume TPIP asynchronous support, we're also able to introduce a new function called asynchronous callout to an enterprise Java Bean. So my existing application programs I have today can get scheduled either through a Java client or through a 3070 green screen, and they can insert an alternate PCB. What we've done with version 10 of IMS is introduced an OTMA descriptor capability. What this allows us to do is identify a T-pipe, which will represent the queue name we need to hold that output message. Then a Java application program running in a web application server as an enterprise Java Bean is able to ask for a request to receive that asynchronous output. IMS Team Resource Adapter will then establish the socket connection to IMS Connect, ask for that message, retrieve that message, and return that back to the Java application program. So this is our first phase as far as supporting asynchronous callouts on each JB. So this is a way you could take existing IMS application programs and start working with those web services in an outbound fashion. Another capability we have with outbound processing is the message-driven bean. In this case, my web application server runtime environment, I have a Java application that's running with a message-driven bean. The message-driven bean then can be called upon to activate a request to retrieve a message from IMS again. The same scenario as before, where IMS, we've inserted the application has inserted a message to the alternate PCB. We've done that. We're able to do a resume TPIP request from IMS Team Resource Adapter, retrieve that message, and deliver it to our message-driven bean. The message-driven bean then will activate an enterprise Java bean so we can do the processing. Also, what I show in this flow is that it is possible for the EJB to send back a response request. When we do that, we will establish a new socket connection to IMS Connect, and we'll schedule another instance of the application program. So in this flow, if you do need to keep track of the origination of the message from Application 1 and a return of the message to IMS Application 2, you and your application program would have to maintain some form of a correlation ID. Moving to Slide 21, another requirement we've had regarding the IMS Team Resource Adapter is the ability to change the password. Your Java Client Application Program, User ID Password Security, may send a request, and we may fail security because the password's expired. Now we have the capability utilizing the IMS Connect function to send in and change that password through the IMS Team Resource Adapter and put a new password name in. Slide 22 talks about a newer capability we've also introduced with the IMS Team Resource Adapter, and that's in the SOA umbrella. Well, what we need to do is build composite business application support. Essentially, what we need to manage here is multiple connections driving IMS conversational transactions. So the same model we saw before, I have my WID, my Webster Integration Development Tool, importing C, COBOL, PL1, or MFS source. My IMS Team Resource Adapter is a network development environment. I would go through my Java Wizards then to build the bindings once again in the application to deploy, in this case, the WebSphere process server. So now I have business process flows, and I can use those business process flows then to leverage my IMS transaction as it runs through conversational program. So this is shown on slide 23, the composite business application model. So in this process server flow, as you see, I have process A calling process A2, process A2 calling B1 and B2, et cetera. And as I go through that flow, what I may do is interacting with different versions of different IMS Connects, IMS Connect X, IMS Connect Y, and also I may be interacting with different versions of IMS, IMS A or IMS B. And with that, then I have different IMS application programs. So as you see, as I walk through the flow, I could also be moving that flow from one IMS process to another by using the SPA. So that's the idea behind IMS SOA, Composite Business Application Support, is to put in the technology we need in the IMS TM Resource Adapter to allow you, as you flow from one process to another in your web server process server environment, to leverage your existing IMS application programs. Okay, now let's move forward on to slide 24 and talk about the IMS SOAP Gateway. The IMS SOAP Gateway is a separate product, but it's free of charge. You could also download from the IMS website. So, going to slide 25, I kind of mentioned SOAP before. What is SOAP? SOAP is becoming the standard as far as how do I interact with a client to a server environment, in this case, an IMS application program. How do we represent that IMS application as a web service? So SOAP provides the definitions we need based on XML protocol to interact with your IMS systems. So we have here a SOAP envelope. What we need to do is be able to process that SOAP envelope and deliver to IMS an IMS message that your application program is used to. So when I look at the IMS SOAP Gateway, moving to slide 26, we see that it provides us a runtime environment. Currently, this runtime environment is available on Windows, XP, 2000, AX, and Z Linux. The runtime environment gives us a way then to receive the SOAP request, parse that request, and then send on over through TCP/IP protocol to IMS Connect and drive the IMS application program without modification. The other aspect of the gateway, as we see on slide 27, is the deployment utility. This utility runs on your Windows environment, and it walks you through the steps that you need in order to represent your IMS application program as a SOAP web service. So moving to slide 28, this is a slow bone prediction, and it shows you all the functionalities that we have with the SOAP gateway, currently version 9.2.1. So in this you see I have SOAP clients. The SOAP client can access my SOAP gateway server over HTTP protocol. I also have the choice if I want to secure that using HTTPS. So I can define a port to support that. We also have these notions of correlator files. A correlator file represents your existing IMS transaction program. So when a SOAP request comes in, the correlator file will help us identify in that envelope what is the IMS transaction we want to process. In addition to that, the other part we need is a connection bundle, which tells us which IMS Connect do I want to establish a socket connection to. So in there we have the information as far as what's the port number defined to IMS Connect, where's the host it's running on, and also need to identify what IMS we want to talk to. In this case, I could also have SSL connection established between IMS SOAP Gateway server and my IMS Connect, so I could define an SSL port into my IMS Connect runtime environment. So this gives us our capability then as far as leveraging IMS transactions through the SOAP Gateway server. On the bottom piece I have, I'll show you, we'll go through the development environment steps. I'll show you later on how we use WebServer Developer for Z as a development environment to help us generate the COBOL code we need to do the XML transformation. So moving on to slide 29, the IMS SOAP Gateway, I just have here some files that show you the server properties, where you define what we need as far as a gateway server runtime environment, our port information we need, where we keep our log, tracing we want to support, the connection bundle where we identify what is the connection we want to establish with our IMS Connect, those files we need, and then the correlator file, the information we need as far as what connection bundle I want to use, if I want to use socket timeout, execution timeout, what IMS transaction code I want to use, and also what's the adapter who's going to do the XML transformation. So moving to slide 30, what we see here is the IMS SOAP Gateway, its connectivity support. In this case, what we support today is commit mode 1, sync level none. That's the protocol we would use in order to have a SOAP Gateway open up a socket connection to IMS Connect and drive your IMS application program. Once again, regarding timeout on slide 31, we have execution timeout, socket timeout. So just like we had for IMS 10 resource adapter, we need to have that same timeout control mechanism in place to allow us to work with your IMS application programs. So that same capability we provide with the IMS SOAP Gateway server. Now let's move on to slide 32 and talk about the development. What do I need to do as far as enabling my IMS application program to be viewed from a SOAP client? Here's where Web Server Developer for Z-Series can help us do that capability. What we do with WDZ is we're going to import your COBOL code that defines the input-output message. That COBOL copybook definition then as we go through wizards. We're going to generate then from that the web services descriptor language we need to pass to your SOAP client, the XML schema definitions that tells us how to do the transformation of the XML document to correspond to your IMS message input and output processing. In addition, we provide then the COBOL code that's needed to do the XML conversion for you. So let's walk forward and see how that works. So on slide 33, you see the problem we have to solve is I have an input message defined in the COBOL data structure, and I need to represent that as an XML document. Likewise, I have an output message I also need to represent as an XML document. So slide 34 shows the first stages of that. WDZ has a COBOL importer. It's going to take that input source, bring that in, and do some parsing for us and generate some code. So slide 35, we see generated converter code. This is the COBOL code we would need then to take that XML document, do the conversion, generate then the message corresponding to the input message that your application program expects us to receive. Think of XML as very similar to what we go through. We've been going through with MFS support. Back when we had to put in 3270 green screen capabilities, we had to have an MFS form that represented that screen. And IMS went through the process then of massaging that data and to build the input message corresponding to your application program. And also when the output response came back, build an output message to represent that on that 3270 screen. The same capabilities we need to support with XML documentation. Well, now we're using, in this case, COBOL code that gives us that conversion capabilities. So moving to slide 36, what we see here is an example of the generated XML code. So we've gone through now, taken the input message, we've now generated the XML documents that represent the input-output processing. Another thing you could do with this is once you've got this code generated is deploy this into an IMS Connect runtime environment. The SOAP gateway, the way it works, it's going to open up the SOAP envelope and figure out what IMS transaction do I want to run. Once we have that in place, we're going to open up a socket connection to IMS Connect. However, what we do is we flow across that connection the XML document. Once we're inside of IMS Connect, we can now take that COBOL code that we've generated, do the XML conversion, and build in the input message the application program expects to receive. Corresponding, when the application program sends an output response, IMS Connect will receive that response, call the conversion routines, build the XML document for output processing, send that to the SOAP gateway. SOAP gateway will receive that, put on the SOAP envelope, and return that then to the client application program. So this is the way we could continue to support IMS application programs without modifications utilizing SOAP technology. Moving on now to slide 38, another choice you have is once I have that COBOL code generated, I can choose to modify that code. So if I have an existing application program, what I may want to do is modify the application program itself and have it do the XML transformation and processing within the IMS-dependent region. Or I may want to create a brand new COBOL application program. In this brand new COBOL application program, I have the intact processing in place to do the XML transformation and work with that data. So slide 39 just shows you that capability now where what I could choose to do is that once again going through the SOAP gateway, pass the XML document through IMS Connect. In this case, IMS Connect will not do the XML transformation. It will pass on that document over to the IMS application program. And in there, then the COBOL converters will be used to do the transformation for you. Slide 40. Just like we introduced asynchronous call-out capabilities for IMS 10 Resource Adapter, we also have the capability using the SOAP Gateway server to reach a web service. So this instance here in this picture, we see the application program scheduled by IMS inserted to an alternate PCP. And once again, we utilize the IMS version 10 OTMA function regarding descriptor capabilities. In this case, we've also extended it to identify an adapter routine that's going to be called to massage the data. So when the application program inserts the alternate PCB, IMS Connect, we will take that message, use the COBOL conversion routine to build the XML documentation around that message, and then send that over to IMS Hope Gateway when the gateway server requests that message to resume T-Pipe. Moving on to the next slide, slide 41, we continue that example by showing you that the web service can see that message and then send an output response. In this case, then, we're going to take the XML document, go through IMS Connect, we do the XML transformation, and then schedule IMS Application 2 to do the processing. So just like before with the IMS 10 Resource Adapter, if IMS Application 1 and IMS Application 2 need to be aware of each other, you'd have to supply a correlation ID to track that flow. On slide 42, we also show you that you have the choice, if you want to, not to do the XML transformation. This would be the case where you modify the application program itself to build the XML data stream and send that through IMS Connect to the SOAP gateway and get to your web service. That also is another option. So going to slide 43, let's review the runtime environments. One of the things we do have is for ZOS. We have a requirement to have ZOS as a runtime environment. So what I show you here on this chart is that today I have my distributed world where IMS Hope Gateway runs. Once again, Windows, AIX, also Z Linux. Because I'm using IMS capabilities, I have the ability to have one IMS Connect, my access multiple IMS systems within one LPAR, multiple LPARs. So what we want to get to is the capability on an LPAR to have an IMS Hope Gateway server. This is a known requirement, and we're looking at how we can address that. Moving on now to the next integration suite function. On slide 44, we're going to talk about IMS MFS web support. So slide 45, what we have is two capabilities as far as MFS web support. We have MFS web enablement, and we have MFS web services. What I will do is I'll talk about both of these and how you can utilize these regarding innovating or adapting your existing IMS application programs. So, slide 46, IMS MFS Web Enablement. This is a utility capability that you could download from the IMS website. So we have MFS XML utility that runs on your workstation. What you're able to do is import MFS source. The utility then will walk through the steps to do the generation we need to create a Java servlet and also the XMI files that represents the input-output message. You would then deploy this application in a WebSphere application server running as a Java servlet. So now my browser would be able to take and send in a request through this Java servlet. The Java servlet code then, we'd recognize that request, the transaction you want to do. We would use the XMI information to do the transformation then of that message to represent what your application program expects to receive. We'd open up a socket connection from IMS 10 Resource Adapter flows over to IMS Connect, then drive your IMS application program. Like always, when a response comes back, we would build the output message and deliver that to your browser. So this is a case where what I want to do is improve my interface to my existing application program. So today where I'm using MFS 3270 green screen capabilities, now what I have is the capability to move to a browser world. So on slide 47, what I show you is an example then of how we could take a green screen and move to a browser environment, and how I could also then, using some of our technology, enhance that with style sheets to create more formative information as far as our browser environment. So once again, this gives us a way to leverage our existing application programs that are MFS-based and move from a 3270 green screen world to a web-based world so we can improve our interfaces. Now let's talk about MFS web services. Now with this capability, what we want to be able to do is leverage those MFS-based application programs as a Java service. So here, once again, we have a tool called WASADI, WebSphere Studio Application Developer Integration Edition. This is our current support. That's our development environment. We also utilize IMS 10 Resource Adapter. So we're going to go through the process then of parsing the MFS and build the Java bindings we need. Then we can deploy that then as an enterprise application to our application server environment. Running that environment then, we're using our J2C services of IMS 10 Resource Adapter. So when a request comes in, EJB proxy will then receive that request, pass it on through our MFS adapter. We will then pull in the code we need to do the conversion, take that and build an input byte array, to deliver the message across that socket connection to IMS Connect. And then once again, our application program running is able to process a request without modification. So, the next slide, slide 49, what's taking place as far as MFS web services? Well, we're going to move to what we call our IMS MFS SOA. So this is going to replace our existing web service solution. What we need to do is move from the WSADIE world to the RAD WID WDZ world. So part of this solution is to help us to move to that environment. So when we go to slide 50, what we see now is that now what I'm able to do is take my MFS and import into a RAD or WDZ development environment and then create a Java's J2C service. So I would deploy that to WebSphere application server, and then I would have my EJBs run and access my IMS application programs. Another path I could take, though, is use WID. And in this case, what I'm doing then is building business processes. So there, what I would be doing is once I've got my application built, and I would deploy that to WebSphere process server. And here what I'm doing is taking care of the service component architecture, SCA services. So now I can participate in a web process flow and leverage my IMS transactions without modifications. Okay, now we're going to move forward. So on slide 51, we're going to start talking about IMS DB Resource Adapter. So all before what we were talking about is those capabilities we have with our integration suite to allow you to leverage your existing IMS TM application programs. Now we want to look at is our database side, our database server capabilities, and what do we have in place to help us leverage our IMS database technology. So moving to slide 52, we have our IMS DB Resource Adapter. We have a variety of runtime environments we support. So with IMS TM, we have what we call Java Message Process Regions and Java Batch Process Regions to allow Java application programs to run. In the case of CICS, we have the JKICS classes allow us to build Java KICS application programs. Utilizing a DB resource adapter, they can also access IMS databases. In the case of DB2, we have stored procedures, a Java stored procedure runtime environment. Once again, we can leverage our IMS databases. And finally, we have WebSphere application server, have enterprise Java beans who need to access IMS databases. So we'll talk about each of these as we go through our presentation. So slide 53. What is it that we provide with IMS DB Resource Adapter? Essentially, we give you is some Java class libraries. What we need to be able to provide for you is the capability for you to develop Java application programs, utilize our Java classes, so we provide an API you could use, high-level API. In this case, we use JDBC support. JDBC is the Java standard for accessing database technology. So we're going to use SQL calls through JDBC and access IMS databases. What we will do on the covers for you then is do the transformation from SQL world to do the DL1 calls going across our CE, the DLI interface. So that's how we go from the Java world into the IMS database world. Okay, so let's look at some runtime environments. On slide 54, what we have is the IMS DB resource adapter. With version 10 of the product, we now support SDK version 5. The Java-dependent regions run now and support this runtime environment. What this means is you could go to the ZOS libraries, download the Java code you need, in this case SDK version 5, to support our new version 10 runtime environments. Essentially what we're doing with these environments is our Java message process region, our Java batch process region, we now take advantage of the object memory and heap, and we also take advantage of a shared class cache. This gives us high performance as far as running IMS transaction programs. On slide 55, what we've also introduced now with version 10 is the standard commit model. Prior to version 10 of IMS, the way an IMS Java application program would work in a JMP environment was it would get a message, process that message, and then before it sent a response back, it would have to do an explicit checkpoint call. If it failed to do that, then we would use a user 118 admin. With version 10, we've gone to the traditional program model again, where I would get a message off the queue, process that message, insert my response, and then get the next message. So now we've gone to the implicit checkpoint process model. So this is new for version 10. You just need to be aware of this. It should be no impact to your application programs, but as you migrate to version 10, you may want to review your applications so you don't have any impact as far as user 118 processing. Slide 56, what I show you here is that we do have the capability with the SOAP Gateway to interact with new Java application programs. In this case, what I could choose to do is as I run a Java message processing region, my Java application program can take the XML document and use Java classes to do the XML transformation. So this gives you another example of how utilizing our IMS DB Resource Adapter, building new Java application programs, running the IMS Java Dependent Regions, we could also leverage IMS SOAP Gateway technology to build new application processing. Slide 57, in the case of the DB Resource Adapter, here we have our stored procedure capabilities. So DB2 provides a capability for a client to execute a stored procedure request. Running the DB2, then we'll start up a workload manager address space. That address space then, utilizing our JDBC adapter interface, under the covers we're going to use an ODBA function to open up a connection to IMSDB, retrieve the data, and send a response back. What I note on here is with version 7, 8, and 9, what we return back to the client from that stored procedure request was IMS fields and IMS result set. What we've done with version 10 is we now provide the capability to return back to you a DB2 result set. So slide 58 will show you how, in this case now, how we've modified our Java code. So under the covers, what we will do is once we've gone through and interrogated the IMS database and built an IMS result set, we will then create a DB2 temporary table. And in there, then we will put the IMS result set, and then we will return that DB2 result set to your client application program. This will make it easier and cleaner for your client applications now to use stored procedure request and process requests as if they were a DB2 result set. Slide 59. Another capability we have with the IMSDB Resource Adapter is the WebServer Application Server environment. We could run on WebServer Application Server on the ZOS platform, or we could also run in a distributed platform world. So what I had to show you here is how we have that capability in place, where through a distributed WebServer environment, I could come up and access WebServer Application Servers running in multiple LPARs on the Z platform. And from there, I'm able to use our ODBA API to access IMS databases. So we support WAS on the ZOS runtime environment, and we also support WAS on the distributed platform environment. Now, moving to slide 60, we're going to look at the IMS DLI model utility. So that's what we need to do is to support the access to IMS databases, we need to have a representation of those databases that our DB resource adapter can process. So on slide 61, we have our DLI model utility. Essentially, what we need to do is to look at existing PSB and DBD information, parse that information, so we have information regarding the hierarchy of the database, what's my segments I have, and also what's my sensitivity to the segments. Once I have that in place, the other piece of information I need is COBOL copybooks. We know that most customers, what we decide to do is when we do our DBD gen, we just define those fields that represent key fields, and the other fields then that represent the entire segment of the database are mapped by COBOL copybooks. So we also have the capability for you to pull in those COBOL copybooks, or we also have source control statements where you could define those different fields. So our utility then will generate then the Java classes we need to represent the metadata for your IMS databases. We also generate a Java report that your Java application programmers can use to build new application programs to navigate through your IMS databases using Java technology. So on slide 62, I just wanted to show you that we also provide a GUI capability. The DLI model utility can run as a batch job on your ZOS platform. It can also run as an application on your workstation platform. Utilizing the technology of Eclipse, what you could do is you could also store DLI as a plugin, and this will give you a GUI model. So I just have a sample here of on this slide, slide 62, of the IMS perspective. What you could see is you could have mapping information that shows you what your database hierarchy looks like and what your PSBs look like as far as navigating that database. Moving on to slide 63, I want to talk about IMS XMLDB. This is a capability we introduced with version 9 of the product. So in slide 64, once again, the IMS DB Resource Adapter, the runtime environments of IMS, DB2 Stored Procedures, or CICS, our WebServer Application Server, they provide a Java runtime environment. In that runtime environment, our DB Resource Adapter can be deployed. And what we're able to have the capability to do now is deal with XML documents. So I can have the ability to retrieve an XML document from an existing IMS database. I can insert an XML document into an IMS database, either one by taking the document and decomposing it and inserting the data into existing IMS segments. I also have the capability to insert an XML document intact within inside of an IMS database. So 565, what I want to show you then is our DB Resource Adapter, the API we introduced with version 9. So we had our JDBC API, and we had our select firmware capability. What we introduce now is a retrieve or a store XML. So we utilize user-defined functions. Within these user-defined functions, then we're able to parse the information we need, utilizing the XML document that was generated, the XML schema that was generated by the DLI model utility. Given that piece of information, in this case, when I retrieve data from my IMS database, I pull out those segments and the fields within those segments, and I use the XML schema that was generated by DLI model utility and compose an XML document. And I'm able to return that XML document into my caller request. On slide 66, we've extended that with version 10 to utilize the XQuery API. XQuery is the next stage as far as open standards processing. And with XQuery, we now have the capability to not only compose XML documents, but we also have the capability to compose any type of document you choose. The other advantage of XQuery is I can identify and I can be more selective as far as which segments, which fields within those segments to want to pull out and have them be used to compose a document. Once again, with DLI model utility, I have the generate XML schemas. I can use that XML schemas then to allow me to build, represent an IMS database in an XML document form that my client can then use for processing. So, moving to slide 67, let's kind of review and summarize what have we done as far as connectivity for IMS transactions and data. Once again, I will tell you that the idea behind the IMS integration suite is to help you build on-demand solutions. What we want you to be able to do is take your existing IMS TM application programs, utilize that business logic without having to modify that business logic, and bring in new types of applications to support that logic. This way will allow us to improve, adapt, or innovate our IMS TM application programs. So once again, looking at our IMS MFS web enablement, we improve by moving from a 3270 green screen to a browser world. We utilize Java server technology, running web server application server, utilize IMS Connect to open up access into our IMS application programs. In the case of IMS MFS SOA support, we're now able to use WebServer Application Server and WebServer Process Server. So we're able to improve and also adapt and do some innovation as far as how I can now have new business processes running in these runtime environments, have our IMS Team Resource Adapter come into play, leverage an IMS Connect, and then going through OTMA to run IMS application programs. In the case of our J2C connector, IMS Team Resource Adapter, we also have the capability to adapt and innovate. So running a WebSphere application server, I can generate EJBs, Java clients, SOAP client applications, have them run in a fully compliant J2E server, leverage that with my existing IMS application programs, and from there I can get to my IMS data. We also talked about the SOAP gateway. In the case of IMS SOAP Gateway, we provide the runtime environment. You don't use WebSphere Application Server or J2E runtime environment. IMS SOAP Gateway is that server environment. We also gave you the utility you need to generate the information that represents your IMS transaction. That WSDL information can be passed into your developer who could then create a SOAP client to interact with through the SOAP Gateway going through IMS Connect to access your IMS application programs. In the case of the IMS DB Resource Adapter, we saw how we could adapt and innovate as far as leveraging our IMS databases. I could go through WebSphere Application Server. We can go through DB2 Store Procedures. We can go through CICS, and we can go through IMS Java Dependent Regions. That's what we're able to do, though, is if I have existing data, I can now use my DB Resource Adapter and create new ways to query and retrieve that data. On slide 68, some additional capabilities as far as connectivity to IMS transactions you may want to look at if you don't see something within the IMS integration suite. We have Webs for Host Access Transformation Services. This is a runtime environment that allows you to improve, once again, your interface to your IMS application programs. In this case, what we're doing is we're creating code that will run in an application server environment. That code then will use TN3270 protocol to come from the WebSphere HATS world into IMS. So in this case, the IMS application, the IMS world sees this as a 3270 terminal. So IMS TM, our VTAM support, will process that request, send that in to and schedule IMS application program. The application program will send a response back. Once again, we're going through IMS VTAM services to send that response back over to HATS. It's up to HATS to do the transformation as far as the input-output message, deliver that to your in-screen browsers. Another choice you may want to pursue is JMS. If I have a website application server and I have Java applications or EJBs who want to use Java Message and Services API, that can go to MQ. And then MQ then can go across to our MQ IMS bridge. And here's another example of a client, in this case, MQ IMS Bridge, going through OTMA to talk to IMS applications, just like IMS Connect would go through OTMA services to talk to IMS applications. So once again, with both these solutions, I'm able to leverage my existing IMS application programs without modifications. So on slide 69, what we come to is some additional capabilities. In the area of WebSphere Message Broker, in MQ environment, I can leverage the MQ IMS bridge to come in and drive my IMS application programs. Another capability with WebSphere Message Broker is SOAP. So I may want to use the SOAP access protocols to get into IMS transactions. So in this case, WebSphere Message Broker can use SOAP to talk to IMS SOAP Gateway. IMS SOAP Gateway then would be able to do that request, send that into IMS Connect. As we discussed before, I could do the XML transformation within IMS Connect, deliver the application program, or I could choose to defer the XML transformation until I get the IMS application program. Another capability we have is WebSphere IICF. WebSphere IICF provides a data server runtime environment on the ZOS platform. So in this example I have here is WebSphere Message Broker. In this case, what I want to do is use an ODBC client to access my IMS databases. So WebSphere IICF provides ODBC client API, and the TCP/IP protocol get up to its WebSphere IICF server running on ZOS platform. IICF then knows how to interact with the IMS application programs. If you need to access IMS TM, it will use APPC protocols. If you want to go and access IMS databases, it could use ODBA interface, or it could use the CCTL interface. So as you see, as we talked about at the very beginning, we put any infrastructure in place with IMS as far as OTMA capabilities, APPC capabilities, VTAM capabilities, TCP/IP capabilities. In the case of IMS DB, we had the CCTL API and the ODBA API. All these infrastructures have been in place now have been able to be utilized by these on-demand solutions to give you access to IMS transactions and IMS databases. On slide 70, our summary is, the message you see is that we have in place with an IMS, TM and IMS DB, the application server and the database server, the infrastructure to allow you to leverage your existing transactions and data. We've also now put in place with the IMS integration suite tools and technology to make it easier for you to build new solutions that can help you leverage your IMS transactions database. So you don't have to go do more of the roll your own. You can now do more of your processing by utilizing the tool technology. That concludes our presentation, IMS integration suite. I'll now return control back to your operator.
Thank you, Kenny. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live question and answer with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer the questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds with your choice. Please listen to all the options before making your selection. Question number one, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3, and we'll pause for just one moment. Question number 2. With the level of technical information presented in this teleconference, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference, if it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And we will pause for just one moment. And question number 3. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And we'll pause again for just one moment. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to our questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone at any time. Once again, that's star 1 if you would like to ask a question. And we do have a question from Catherine Mitchell.
I have a question regarding slide 49. The Ken had mentioned that currently, I guess, we use WSAD IE for our web development tool, and that will be changing to RAD. I'm just wondering, is that with IMS version 10, or is it earlier than IMS version 10?
That will be with IMS version 10, because what we're doing with IMS version 10, we're adding, the SOA capabilities. So it's a combination of function we're putting within IMS base itself.
Okay, so at the point we move to IMS 10, that's when we need to switch to RAD.
Yeah, and that's just a development environment, and what we've got is with RAD, we've got a migration capability to help you migrate your application you built with WSAD IE.
Okay.
Ms. Mitchell, anything further?
Well, I guess I have another question. We haven't yet converted to IMS version 9. When we do, we're using IMS Connect, will we have new jar files that will be needed on the distributed side?
When you have IMS Connect today, you said?
Yes.
And you're going to go to version 9?
When we go to version 9 of IMS?
Right. You'll have IMS Connect comes with the product. And your jar files work. What you'll look for is if you start exporting new functionality, either function that's introduced with an IMS Connect. That's what you watch out for. But your existing applications, if you've got jar files with those, they should work okay.
Okay.
Once again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. Next, we'll go to Miran Mozafari.
Hello, Ken. This is Miran. How are you? Very good. How are you doing?
Good. Ken, you mentioned something about COBOL change and IMS 10. Would you give more explanation on what is needed to be changed on COBOL programs if one goes to version 10?
Are you talking about the Java-dependent regions?
Yeah.
What we did in the case of version 7, 8, and 9 of IMS, when you write a Java application program, we introduced, because you're running a Java-dependent region, we introduced a programming model where the application had to use the IMS Java IMS transaction class and explicitly do a commit request before they did the next get unique call in the message queue. With version 10 of IMS, what we've done is we're changing the Java programming model, so the Java program, when it's running a JMP region, does not have to explicitly do a commit. It could just go up and do a get unique call, and we'll under the covers do the commit call, just like we do for MPPs today, you know, if they're COBOL or PL1 applications. So we're matching that same message processing model we've always had with MPPs, with our JMPs.
Got it. Thank you. Sure. Also, Ken, is there any chance to get a copy of the presentation later? Because I am trying to save it. It doesn't let me save it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand why not, but we can figure that out. Yes.
Very good. Thanks.
Once again, that is star one if you would like to ask a question. And, Mr. Blackman, it appears there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, great. Thank you.
That does conclude today's teleconference. We'd like to thank you all for your participation. Have a wonderful afternoon.